Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with the charming, delightful, very difficult to describe, Joey Panic, who will be co-starring in the farcical musical, Gutenberg the Musical, at American Stage Theater in St. Petersburg. Joey's story is interesting because he cannot be defined, because he makes the point that we are variable, we human beings. He makes the point that we don't have to be just one thing. We can be many things, all of which are true, all of which we can enjoy, and in Joey's case, all of which everyone else can enjoy. Stay tuned. Here come the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you are, not some version of yourself, which is the one you think will bring you attention, affection, safety. It is my belief as a psychotherapist that too many of us learned in our childhood that something about us would bring a consequence that we didn't like. A consequence like being ignored or neglected or teased or punished or abandoned or even abused. And so we learned very, very young that this quality, whatever it was, no matter how natural it was to us, no matter actually how human it was, but of course we wouldn't know that at the time, it had to go. We had to not be that. None of us can really survive feeling unloved, unimportant, uncherished, expendable, although so many of us come out of childhood feeling precisely those things. So, clever and flexible as we humans are, we learned first to pretend we were not those things, and then to hide those things, and finally to forget that we were those things. So we forget that we could be assertive and say what we think. We forget that we can break spontaneously into a raucous laughter. We forget that we're interested in drawing or painting or singing or dancing. We forget that we're curious. We forget that we're healthy, if that didn't go down well. And believe it or not, in some families, parents like children they can take care of. So healthy children are not so much fun. So children in those situations learn how to be what is required and then grow into human beings who have lost access to something really important. That's the point of the Lynn Show. And to make this point, I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art. And the point I want to make with that is that you can hear what it sounds like when you really are who you really are. Because in order to do that, in order to be an artist in our culture, it has to be who you really are. We make it really tough. So Joey Panic, a poster child for what I'm trying to show. Joey, who continues to evolve, continues to discover things about himself, continues to be willing to try to show all these many aspects of himself. And I'm not going to tell you that story because Joey can tell it better. So here he is now, Joey Panic. Okay, I am here with Joey Panic. And I'm explaining to Joey that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really know, but I suspect that we're talking about more than one art here, are we not?
No, that's true.
Well,
that's true.
If you had to, when people ask you what you do, what do you say?
I've changed the answer over the years, and now lately I say that I'm a personality. I guess media personality would be more fair. My day is split up between digital arts and media arts and then performing arts, yeah.
Could you describe them for me?
Sure, sure. I've worked in digital media for the last 5 years.
What does that mean?
Online, web. I do web video production, and I used to do it for people, for clients,
mm-hmm.
or for campaigns, and now I've gone off on my own, and I'm pretty much doing it for myself.
So that means that you're taking videos of yourself and putting them on the web?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Taking videos of yourself doing what?
It depends. Sometimes it's promoting something. Sometimes it's talking about current issues or current pop culture trends. That's pretty much where I live in the world of trends and pop culture.
Okay, so what is your website?
How About Joey.
How About Joey.
Yep.
And at How About Joey, you would see these videos that
yes.
you're doing for whatever reason you have chosen to do them at the moment.
Yes.
That's
mm-hmm.
great.
Yeah.
Okay, I know also that you sing.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, do you, did you do that as a art, as a career?
Yes, for 14 years I toured as a stage actor, primarily musicals, because I sang and I danced a little. So yeah, I sing and I love it. If I could do that all the time, I would.
Okay, so basically you're a performer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You're an entertainer.
Yes, yes.
Yes
that works.
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I only ask one question. I mean, actually I've asked you a number, but that's because you're not easy to categorize.
Yes.
You're not simple. A lot of people are, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you're not. So I've already asked you more questions than I ask anybody, but never mind. This is the question I ask everybody. Can you tell me, do you remember the first time in your life when performing, entertaining, getting attention, singing, telling stories, any of that occurred to you, drew you, felt interesting, powerful? You know what I'm asking?
Yes, yes, I can. I can. There's a definite moment, and it's kind of, my family relives it a lot, so it's easy for me to draw.
I see.
I am the youngest of four boys, so I have three older brothers. And it was always a matter of kind of making your voice heard in my house, even from a young age. You know, you're one of four. You're one of four boys. We were the Panic Boys. So my brothers were all in a school talent show, and they were singing songs from Grease. The movie, it was after the movie had come out. And they...
Wait a minute. So they all sing, everybody in the family sings, or they like to sing?
They sang.
Yeah, right. They're not singers, but
no,
they sing, right.
They sang.
Right, so,
yeah.
Right. So
and it was one of those where, like, every kid in that grade performed in
I
this
got
talent
it.
Show, right? And I wasn't in school yet, because I think I was four, I was before school age. and I desperately wanted to be in it. And it was kind of, I guess maybe my brothers were all performing, and I didn't know that I couldn't. So I begged my mother to let me go on stage and do one of the songs from Grease.
By yourself?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the song that I did was Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee. And my mom used to have these handkerchiefs, right? These like paisley colored handkerchiefs that she would tie her hair back in. And I grabbed one and I just put it over my head. I didn't tie it. I just laid it on top of my head like a doily.
Right.
And I sang Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee. And so that was like the moment. And I remember, because family folklore, right? My mom said that one lady turned to her and said, I can't believe you would make him do that. And she said, make him. I couldn't stop him. So that's kind of where it all began.
And you remember it?
Yeah.
You remember the feeling of being on stage and having the attention?
Mm-hmm. And it was fearless. It was absolutely fearless.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think as we get older, then we start to like put fears on top of ourselves.
Well, wait a minute. We can talk about that in a minute.
But it was just that pure moment of, oh, I can do that. All right, I'll go do that.
Yes, yeah. And I want to do that, and I love doing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so clearly here, you know, this is demonstrating that you have this. Mm-hmm. So do you continue to do that? Do you get lessons? Are you in class plays? What happens?
I was still really too young to do a lot, and plus, you know, the fourth son in kind of pretty much a working class family, I was kind of left to whatever my brothers were doing. I could just do that with them. And it wasn't until my brothers started doing school plays that I started, my whole family, you know, we'd go to my brother's play, and if it was more than one night, I would beg my mom to take me the second night.
Wow.
Or multiple times.
Both, all brothers, one brother?
Two of them. The two oldest. Right. Yeah. The other brother does not want to be on stage. He'll slink into the background whenever given the chance. But, so I would beg to go, so I loved it. And I would watch the show, and I would learn, I just know every line just from watching.
Okay, now are we talking mostly about straight plays or musicals?
Both, a combo of both. And sometimes it was school plays that, you know, who even know who wrote that because it was, you know, some horrible play. But, and musicals sometimes. So I was just so taken by them. And, Yeah, so I'd beg my mom, because she would usually go a second time.
Mm-hmm.
She'd go once to watch my brother and then once to watch the whole play. And so I would just...
Very cute.
Yeah.
So she was very supportive of this entertaining thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, it just became my thing in the family, you know, like that became what I did. I would entertain.
Do you remember how that started or that it was ever thus, huh?
I think it became that thing, like, you know, then that story got told about how I got up at my brother's talent show. So then that was the way that I kept getting attention was, oh, yeah, the story about Joey doing the thing. So then I just kept doing those things.
So what kinds of things did you do?
We would have a family party. No matter where it was, I would get on an elevated surface and just dance. And people would, like, give me, you know, DJs with the 33 records then. They would give me records at the end because I would dance the whole time. Like, to entertain, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I literally would get on if there was a stage or an elevated a table, a chair, whatever.
And we're talking here about 6, 8, 10, 12,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so at some point, did you also become part of school plays?
Yes, I did some school plays. I didn't really know that I could sing until a teacher pointed out to me in, like, second grade. And that was good to know. You know, I just was singing loud.
What did the teacher say?
The teacher started giving me solos because she liked my voice.
Second grade.
Second grade.
We're talking here about 7?
I think so. Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, so by 7, you're already identifying yourself with this.
Yes.
This is something I do well. This is something I like. This is something, right?
And I loved music class. I mean, I loved the what do they call them? The superlative? No. Whatever those extra classes were called in school.
Electives.
Yeah, electives, yes. They were superlatives, I guess,
yes,
for me.
They were. Apparently. Yeah, right.
But I liked those classes, and so having music class was great because I might not have known that I could sing if there wasn't a music class in my school.
I think that's a really important thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
I like to talk a lot about the impact of school, actually, because it can go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get what you got, which was encouragement and recognition,
mm-hmm.
or you can get the opposite. Some kids get that.
Yeah.
But you were lucky across the board here. I mean, you had a very forgiving and encouraging parent. Mm-hmm. You had an encouraging teacher. You were right. And apparently your brothers were not jealous or angry, or they didn't mind that their baby brother was getting all this attention.
No, I mean, it was just the way, you know, we're half Italian, half Polish, so it was kind of, at the dinner table, you had to do something to get your voice heard, you know?
So, but not all your brothers did. We have the slinking brother.
No, yeah, he was quiet. But, like, you know, all my brothers are very funny. Uh-huh. So, you know, if you could make my parents laugh at the dinner table, then it was like, oh, that was the greatest thing ever. Yeah.
And, again, this is a lovely thing. I mean, this says that making people laugh, getting attention, you know, bringing attention to yourself and then giving young people joy, this is a great thing to do.
Yes.
All right, good. Yeah. So, you go on in, you're in school plays. And
yes, and actually, and I did some community theater, but I was just reminded that a great thing happened when I was in, you know, what is it, the junior high level, middle mm-hmm. school. At seventh grade, my junior high was a mile up a hill from the high school where my brothers went. And there was a wonderful drama teacher there who allowed me at seventh grade to walk down the hill after school and do the high school plays. And it's, I know, I didn't realize what a big deal that was until recently. And I was like, wow, that's a pretty big deal.
That's a very big deal.
Yeah.
Do you remember how that occurred?
My parents. And obviously because my brothers, they did school plays. So there was already a nice, like, oh, the Panic Boys, they're good boys. Mm-hmm. They're talented. So they kind of paved a way where it wouldn't be difficult for a teacher to say, yes, we'll let him. And
so somebody asked.
I think it might have been my mom.
Here's your
and
mom
also,
again,
too, right? I was the brother. I was the little brother that was at every play.
Oh, yeah, right.
Making my presence known, I'm sure.
Right.
So the drama teacher said, yes, he can come down. And she was phenomenal with me.
Yeah?
At seventh grade, I was in plays with people that were, you know, seniors. So they were 5 years older than me.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because the point you're making, I think, is that not only was the activity delightful, natural, easy, mm-hmm. but it gave you entree to this other thing, this world of grown-ups, you know.
Yeah.
It made you special mm-hmm. in a, you know, in a very big way.
Yeah.
I'm sure that even though you say now you're just recognizing how important it was, then you understood that it was a big deal, because there weren't other people, not other kids like you.
Yeah.
Right?
And I did like to letting my teacher know, like, oh, I have to leave 15 minutes early because I'm walking down the hill to go do a play at the high school.
Yes, you know? Right, exactly.
I definitely milked that.
Right. But again, another thing that told you that this was a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Definitely. And I was a good student, and I was smart up to a point in school. There was a certain grade level where I stopped getting the highest grades. All my brothers were salutatorian or valedictorian of their class, and I was not. So it was really, I'm so glad I had this thing, you know, that was special.
Of course, it made this thing so much more important.
Yes.
Right. Yes. It was the thing that made you stand out, mm-hmm. that made you special, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So junior high school. High school, you're in the high school plays or you're not?
Yes, I was in the high school plays. Well, when I got to high school, actually, it's funny. By the time I got to high school, they phased out. There was a different drama teacher. Mine retired. The one I loved retired. And I kind of felt like, well, I did this when I was in seventh grade, so this is a little bit beneath me, which is awful, you know. You get that cocky phase of teenage years. And I actually did not finish high school. I dropped out after 10th grade.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did that go down?
I only had interest in doing theater. And I was doing community theater.
Oh, hold on. So then how did that happen?
How did I get to drop out?
No, how did you do community theater?
I had been doing that kind of all along, since I was, you know, 10 or so, 10 or 11.
So your mother took you to auditions?
Yes, I would audition for things. Again, one of my older brothers did community theater.
I see.
So then when I got to an age where I could play a young adult,
right.
I started doing back-to-back community theater shows. My father would drive me and pick me up every night for rehearsal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were wonderful.
Yeah, I thank him. I still thank him, yeah.
Okay, so by the time you're in 10th grade, which mm-hmm. is what, 16, 14?
Yes, 16.
16, mm-hmm. you say to yourself, there's nothing here for me anymore. Right?
Isn't that funny how small your world is when you're that age? Yes.
Well,
I've done everything here.
Right. I've done this.
Uh-huh.
Been here, done that.
Uh-huh.
And I know what I want, and I can't get it here, and I can get it there.
Mm-hmm.
So what did your parents think?
They were perplexed a little. My father's more traditional, and he was not okay with this. But my mother exercised her strength, I guess. They were also, sidebar, this was nearing the end of their marriage. So they were dealing with a lot of other things. Most of my brothers were out of the house in college. So none of my brothers would have been able to drop out. But I did. And the way that they let me do it was I could pursue my GED diploma and taking community college courses. So at 10th grade, they let me start community college.
And the community college let you start at 10th grade?
Yeah, yes, and I think that was probably unusual.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I know that, if you take community college courses and get so many course credits, they'll then give you your GED. So that was going to be the plan.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
So the courses you were taking were leading to a high school diploma.
They were supposed to.
They were,
yes.
I see.
But you take a 10th grader who didn't have any interest in school, only wanted to
begin with
plays.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And then you throw them in a college setting where no one is really keeping track of you. I just wanted to go to rehearsal at night. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to just do my plays.
Well, this is a kind of interesting thing. Because not only did your family, until here anyway, mm-hmm. support this thing that you do, which is really about entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently, this is how it looks to me.
Yeah.
This may not be true, but how it looks to me is they also gave you, without meaning to, and without realizing that they did, a lot of permission to do what you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of kids couldn't have done that simply because they couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It
yes.
would not have occurred to them to break all the rules you broke just because you wanted to.
Exactly. Exactly. And, that's not always a good thing.
What are you thinking?
Well, there was a period in my early 20s where I looked back at that being my worst decision, the crossroads of where life could have gone. Mm-hmm. And I wished that I had finished high school and gone on to a college musical theater program.
Yeah, but you didn't understand that. And that's the other thing they couldn't give you. They didn't know either.
Right.
They could have said to you, what you want to do, you're going to need more training, and mm-hmm. this is a way to get it.
Yes.
Nobody could tell you that.
No.
And, of course, by then I think you were probably pretty stubborn.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
And I knew, I knew how to work both my parents, and I just had to do enough to make them, so I could keep doing what I wanted to do.
Right. So this is interesting. That ability, it seems to me, can serve you extremely well in the world, and sometimes it can bite you in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about that?
No, you're very correct. Mm-hmm. Very, very correct. It's okay. It's great to learn that you don't have to follow the traditional path. I don't know if as an adult now, it's great to look back on that lesson, but when you are 16, 17, sometimes the traditional path might not be so bad.
No.
There's things about it. There's things on that path that you might need.
Yeah, that you might later on mm-hmm. wish you had. Okay, so what did you do? Did you start to work for money?
Yes, they told me if I wasn't going to finish school, I had to get a job. And they make you, my parents, they're not stupid. They send you to the worst job ever so that you'll choose school. But I fooled them.
Again.
I took a job at the mall mm-hmm. in retail, daytime retail at the mall, the worst thing ever. And I kept doing my plays at night until finally I said I'm moving to New York.
How old were you?
20 by that time, 19 or 20.
So you did it from 16 to, you did it for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. I did eventually take the test and get my GED.
That period of time.
Yeah, during that period of time.
Okay.
Because it was becoming obvious to me, there's not a lot you can do without a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just kind of part of my deal.
Right.
That I think they had given me an ultimatum at some point, maybe. But then, so I said, I'm going to New York. And I moved to New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened?
I did, I got my first professional show, which was at a regional theater on Long Island called Gateway Playhouse, which does great stuff. It's a great job for you know, seasoned professionals in New York and some Broadway veterans, because it's 2 hours from the city,
yeah.
So you can still get your weeks working, but then you can hit auditions during the day. So that was a great job.
Do you remember what the show was?
The show was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Yes, which I've done many times in community theater productions, so that was cake.
Okay, so now so far, you've had no training.
Nope, no real training.
Ever?
Some tap dance lessons. And I stumbled into a few dance lessons.
But you haven't studied voice, and you haven't studied acting.
I had a voice class in college in that period,
yeah.
And it was the only class I went to. but it got a little technical and hard, and I was like,
I don't need.
I'm
that.
Already doing this at night, you know, cocky.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, because given that you didn't train, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a career.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can say now, without any ego or anything, that I had enough natural, raw talent to get me somewhere.
Right.
But not to take me all the way, you know.
So okay, so you're in New York, and
mm-hmm.
you get work pretty soon.
Yeah.
Right? And
yep.
then what happens?
I did a couple more. I got a couple more shows.
Also at Gateway?
Yes, another mm-hmm. one at Gateway, and then I got a national tour.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first
tour. Did you get a card, equity card?
Yes, I got my equity card on this tour.
Uh-huh.
It was a tour of the musical version of The Goodbye Girl.
Mm.
Not a well-received musical, but it had Eddie Mecca from Laverne and Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
He played Carmine, the big ragu. He was the lead in that. So I did that.
And you're having a wonderful time.
I'm having a ball.
Right, and you're about 22, 20, like
yeah,
that?
21.
21,
yeah,
oh my
all,
God.
These were all coming pretty
right,
quickly.
Right.
And then I got homesick. And I went back home, and for the next several years, I had this triad of homes. So I had my hometown of Syracuse. I'd go back there. I found an office job that was very flexible and supportive. And then...
So home, meaning you went back to your parents?
Back to Syracuse,
right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think I got an apartment, you know, and then they went, you know, I kind
yeah,
of
right,
bounced
right.
around. These were those I don't know what to do years, and then I'd go back to New York for stints, you know, a few months to audition, a year again, and then got my first job in Sarasota. So those three.
How did that happen?
Bob Turoff, who was the founder and everything of the Golden Apple Dinner Theater down here, I worked with him up at Gateway.
Ah.
In a production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And there were some other people I worked with were working down here and recommended me. And he said, oh, I remember him. And so he hired me for a couple shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy because now I was like early 20s. I'm in the union, so I'm getting my insurance weeks toward my pension. I've got my salary, which was low,
mm-hmm,
you know,
right,
but
right.
I'm still like, okay,
right.
I've cracked the code.
Right.
So I would come down here and do some shows, and then I'd go back up to New York and try to make a go of it, and usually strike out, then go back to Syracuse, then come back down here. So that was that triad, that
mm-hmm.
triangle for a few years, quite a few years.
And are you pushing 30 yet, or you're still...
Not yet. I'm in my mid to late 20s.
My...
So the next probably 4 or 5 years. Yeah, that seems right.
And in this time, what are you saying to yourself?
I liked Sarasota a lot,
mm-hmm.
and so I was saying...
Because you were spending more time here.
Yes, and my parents, who God love them, have taken all these risks with me,
yeah.
are sitting back, I can hear their praise, like, you got in a union, you have insurance, you're working at the craft that you love. Yeah, you are a working actor, and they were just happy for me.
Right.
And they knew that I liked it down here, so like, this is great. I didn't, you know, I had an old car, I didn't own anything or have anything. And so I was still living kind of carefree. But it was fun. I had a lot of fun down here
oh, yeah.
in that time. And,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I'd go to the beach. I had a great tan. And I was working nights and weekends, you know, at
mm-hmm.
the theater. Yeah. But then there was always that piece of, I'm not knocking it, but Florida Dinner Theater, and when you're performing in your early 20s, you're like, ooh, I would get these waves of, this can't be it. You know, this can't be my peak.
Yeah. That was the question I was asking. What were you saying to yourself?
Yeah. I was saying, like, ooh, you're having fun, but, you know, I'd work with some great performers who would come down here from New York or Chicago or even L.A., and then they would go back, and several times they would say to me, again, not to knock, this was, you know, this was my livelihood for a while, but they would say to me, like, what are you doing here? Yeah. Like, you're pretty talented. Why don't you go back to New York? And when that would inspire me, and I'd say, I gotta get back. So finally, after several jobs, several great jobs, I did one more tour that went to Italy of West Side Story, which was like a great once-in-a-lifetime experience. I think I said to myself, that was so great, this is the end of this chapter. I gotta go to New York now. So I moved back to New York this was about a little over 10 years ago now, 2002, I think. I moved back to New York. This was also close after 9/11.
Right.
Very hard to get any type of job.
No.
Any type of survival job. It was a struggle. That was a hard time. I was working 3 temp jobs. Because once you got a temp job, you didn't want to give it up.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, I just landed this job. And I was afraid to take time off to audition for anything. So my life consisted of working to pay my bills to live there. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was working to live, but my life there was just working.
Right.
So that was the final big thing that said, you got to get a degree.
Uh-huh.
So that you can get a survival job.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. So what did you do?
I went back to Syracuse. It's so funny, right? It's like the Elaine Stritch song where she sings about taking the bridge over from here. So I went back to Syracuse. Enrolled in community college, the same community college, the same classrooms.
Oh, yes. My God.
And I went back, but by this point I was 25, I think, and I was determined, you know, and I was paying for it myself.
Yeah, right.
So I was like, this is not time to screw around.
Right.
So I found...
Well, you waited long enough so that you could see that there was value in this, that you needed it. So,
right. And they kept trying to push me my counselor, because of my background, said, oh, let's get you into the music program. And I said, no, I want to get into a business program because I want to make money to support this other career that I have that's doing well.
Right.
I just know that if I'm in a big city, I need to make money. So, thank God, she convinced me, well, we have a good radio television department. Why don't you go in there? And I thought, well, what's the business application? And they were calling it electronic media communications. Uh-huh. And there was a video production concentration.
Oh.
So I thought, well, there's a skill. All right, I can do that. That's a skill. And in my class, my teachers over the next couple of years tried to convince me to go into broadcast journalism because they're like, oh, you're natural on camera. You know, you're a performer, so you can turn it on. And I said, no, I already have a career that is, you know, difficult to support. I don't want a second one. Like, this one's got to feed this one. So I chose video production. Mm-hmm. And then you go to school full-time. I was working part-time, so I wasn't making any money. And when I finally got my associate's degree, I said, I would like to just make a little bit of money. So I took a job in an insurance company for 6 months. And I made money. Mm-hmm. And I moved out of my dad's house. I got my grown-up apartment. You know, mm-hmm. I have a college degree now. I'm an adult. I have an apartment, and I hated it. I missed performing so badly. So a show opened up down here in Sarasota. We're following the circle of life. So I said, well, I'll go down and do this one show, and then I'm moving back to New York. And I came down. That was 2006, and I've never left Sarasota.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And I was only supposed to be here. I said, I put stuff in storage in, like, people's closets up in Syracuse, anywhere I could find. So I'm like, I'm only going down for 2 months. I'll be right back.
Wow.
Yes.
So, all right. How then did you get from the Golden Apple, you know, to digital
yes.
web thing, right?
It was, all right, so I come down in 2006. I work at the Golden Apple, and I worked show after show. I started expanding into other theaters. I went up to American Stage. Up in St. Pete, Theater Works, mm-hmm. which used to be in downtown Sarasota. Then the Alhambra up in Jacksonville. Mm. I started just auditioning for a bunch of things and started getting them because I was in a very sweet spot of my stage career because I was getting to the age now where I could play interesting parts and I have that quirky guy look. Mm-hmm. So it was things were lining up.
And you could do everything.
Yeah, yeah. When I was younger, I wasn't a great dancer, but I was young, and I looked like a chorus boy, so I was in the chorus, but again, I'm a better dancer now than I was then, so it wasn't a good fit. Mm-hmm. But then now I was like starting to get these really good roles, and things were going cool. So everything's going great, and then I had my first year, like 2009, union theaters are starting to close around Florida. And Florida used to have a ton of them, yeah. Right? Even Sarasota had a ton of them. They start closing because it's hard for them to keep their head above water, and the first thing that they do is they cut back on their equity contracts. So I was going from no breaks in employment, like lining up jobs so perfectly, to now having these gaps. Mm-hmm. And I'd fill them with temp jobs in Sarasota, and then I started filling them with bartending jobs. And that was not great. The money was great, but the lifestyle is just horrible. You know, you become a nocturnal. Yeah. It wasn't good. So I started looking at things, and I was going, this is not working. I'm not working. My gaps of unemployment are getting larger because it's harder to find jobs. So I eyeballed Disney, and I had this, like, romance, this dance with Disney for a year of getting called back and called back. And I thought, I'm going to book this one, and then not getting it. Because Disney had laid off a bunch of people who had been working at Disney for 20 years. Eesh. They had bought homes, they had mortgages, their lives in Orlando. So to be a newcomer trying to get hired at Disney, it was the worst time. So, again, and I would come in for an open call, and they'd say, hey, have we ever brought you in for Finding Nemo? And I was like, yeah, many times. Well, let's bring you back in. So I kept thinking, I'm going to get it. And I was set to move to Orlando, didn't get it. So my thought process at this point, I think, was I was prepared to move to St. Pete, because it was a little more centrally located to Orlando, Tampa theaters, St. Pete theaters, even these theaters down here. And Matt Orr, who used to be, a big name here, but he's moved, but he still has left a legacy here. He had just developed this thing called The Hub with Rich Swire Jr. And he was a good friend of mine. And he would put me in videos from time to time on his website, which was This Week in Sarasota. He owned it at the time with The Hub. And he was like, hey, why don't you do some video work for me? Okay. And then again, that was easy to just step in and host videos. Yeah, that's great. And then that summer of 2009, I was preparing to move, and he said, don't go. Let me show you some places in Sarasota. So we just started experiencing parts of Sarasota I'd never experienced before. And some of them, like the roller derby, right, which is kind of silly, but I was like, this is a cool thing. Mm-hmm. I never did this because I was always an actor here. I always had an actor schedule. The Improv Festival, that was like one of the biggest selling points to making me stay in Sarasota.
Wow.
So I thought, this is really cool. Who knew this was happening? The SRQ, the collection of all the Sarasota Ringling grads and the artists and their screen printing parties. This was like, this is a really cool city. There's this like underground art scene that I didn't even know about. So I launched a venture with The Hub, a digital marketing venture. Because remember, I had this video production degree that I haven't used.
I haven't used this in four years, right?
But I've got it. So I took a chance with The Hub, and I ended up staying with them for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And that kept leading to more digital video.
So now, tell me all the things you're doing now.
Right now. I'm in an improv troupe with Christine Alexander. I host and I MC events. Mm-hmm. I started doing a few years ago, and people liked it, I guess. They liked what I brought. So I've been doing a lot more of that. I've done the Arts Alliance Awards for the last, I think, 4 years. And we have a nice partnership that I think we're going to keep going, which is cool. So we do that. Christine and I also, I started taking improv classes from her a few years ago, and then I joined her improv troupe, because she has her one at Florida Studio Theater Improv, and then there's another one called Lazy Fairy Improv. So I joined that, and now Christine and I have kind of headed up together, so we are this improv duo. and we do what we call laughing lunches. Mm-hmm. Someone called one Christmas a few years ago, and they said, will you just go make my coworkers laugh? Everyone's in a really bad mood, and I don't want to send them candy or flowers or cookies, but will you just make them laugh? And we're like, okay. So I called Christine, so I was like, well, you have to do this with me. So we went, and we just surprised them in their office. We made them laugh for half an hour, and then we left. And then we started realizing, oh, people like that. So we've launched a business called Laughing Lunches, where you can hire us for custom improv shows.
Wow.
And that's grown into, like, team building using improv and corporate training using improv. And we've done that at Ringling College, South Florida Museum, all over.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's one pillar, mm-hmm. right? About a little over a year ago, I started freelancing with ABC7. They wanted me to start covering social events. And then, like, just, you know, come on every Monday and talk about what happened over the weekend. So I was like, all right, that'll be fun. And that's hard work.
Yes.
I didn't realize. And I did it for 6 months, and then I was like, ooh, this is tough. Every weekend, right? Out there with a camera, running and gunning, as they call
right?
So I asked them, can I do something different? And of course, after 6 months, they were like, all right, you've proven yourself. What do you want to do? I said, I want to talk about things that are trending. So they didn't know what I was going to do. You know, they're like, well, show me. So I started just taking things that are trending. You know, hey, what are some wedding trends? That was my first one with Nicole Caney. And I went, she was setting up a wedding. I interviewed her. I cut together a package of here's some things people are talking about in wedding trends. And then every week since then, I've just done trending social trends. So I'm their social trend correspondent.
But this isn't simple stuff. I mean, this is hard work, too.
This is actually using my degree.
Yes, right. Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And no one around here has been doing that. I think in larger markets, they do have, like, a social trend correspondent or something, right? But it's so much fun, and it keeps me, I'm always researching what people are talking about in every field, in fashion, in health, in fitness.
And I imagine people are coming to you now, too.
Yes, yeah, which is great. Mm-hmm. Now we've kind of built something that that's kind of fueling itself.
Right.
And I love that. I mean, and that started taking up a little bit more and more of my focus and energy. Where that's one of my main gigs right now. Then that led to ABC7 has launched their own daytime talk show called The Suncoast View. It launched in September, and I'm now a regular weekly segment on there. Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. And wow. I guest host that a lot, so it's going in the right direction.
Yes, it's so interesting because it's all entertainment.
Yes.
It's all, look at me, I'm Sandra D.
Yes, it is, it's true.
You know.
It's very true.
It is.
Uh-huh.
It is. But you're not singing very much.
No. I also do, for the last couple years, I've done a cabaret with my friend Mark Bowers. We met singing at an event, and I was like, oh, this guy's a great singer. And we just have this kind of nice on and off stage chemistry that now we do a few a year. So probably quarterly I'm doing a cabaret of some sort.
What do you guys do?
We take pop songs traditionally. We kind of have this Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis thing on mm-hmm. stage. I'm the goof and he's more of the, you know,
straight guy.
Yes. And we will deconstruct pop songs and kind of do an acoustic version with really close harmony. Because we both love it. And so we do that. And then I do some, it's kind of like borderline stand-up. Because I've realized that some of these stories people find interesting. It is Look at Me, I'm Sandra D. So I'll sing and tell stories, and I've started doing more and more of that. So I'm branching out. But it's so funny how, in this day and age, you know, you've got to be a reality TV show star to now head up a Broadway show, right?
Yes.
Or you have
right,
to, you've
right,
got to
right.
be famous for something else to do something.
You have to be the personality, right? Right.
Yes.
Right.
And
right.
I can see that on my smaller scale. I can totally see that. Now that I have this, like, television personality, or, you know, or
yes.
online, too, mm-hmm. online media personality, it has fed into, now if I do a cabaret, people are like, oh, yeah, I'll go see him, he's on ABC7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's something else, too, that occurs to me, and that is that you started out wanting to be something traditional,
mm-hmm.
you know, a Broadway performer,
yeah.
you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things happened. The industry changed dramatically during the time that you were trying to become this.
Yes, right? Yes.
And the world also was sort of against not only you, but anybody trying to enter the mm-hmm. that business in traditional ways, right?
Yeah.
But what you did that most people don't do, I think, is that you simply kept evolving.
Yeah.
You know, this new way of being showed up and you said yes.
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes it was in the form of a person, a mentor, who said, hey, have you thought about doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad I listened to them, right? But it's true. And I have friends who are still in the theater, and they looked at me at first for leaving the theater when I did as, well, what a shame. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's not performing anymore. Mm-hmm. And they stayed, and my way is not better than their way at all. I'm not even suggesting that. But I'm so glad that I did look at the circumstances and say, things aren't how they were anymore. You know, the road has changed.
It really has.
Yeah.
But also, you're pretty flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, even while you were still trying to be that other thing, you know, you had the sense to go back and get a degree. You had, you said to yourself, wait a minute, I need to make some money. Okay, I'll work at this job. I don't like that much, but I'll get some. You weren't stubborn. And it's interesting because your early life suggests that you were nothing but stubborn.
I know.
You know, but then as you got older, you got more and more flexible, is what it seems like.
Yeah.
And also, you have a lot of skills. Not everybody who's trying to make it in theater has all the skills you have.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true. And I, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound like I
need to. No, you don't have to say it. I'm saying it. It is true. It's clear. And I want to make this as a point because I think that the willingness to expand your view of who you are, you know,
mm-hmm.
to use everything you are. I think a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that you're sort of a living example of how someone can go off on one direction and then say, oh, wait a minute, there seems to be a roadblock here. Let me try this over here. Oh, no, okay, I'll start this over here. And, you know, and for whom it's worked so well.
Yeah.
Because this is who you are.
Mm-hmm. I went to someone recently, he's an astrologist actually. Mm-hmm. I also have a wonderful business coach that's like a mentor. But the challenge that I've had along the way is that I'm not amazing at anything, right? But I'm pretty good at a bunch of things, and it gets very difficult because I notice that people want to put you in a category, like, well, what are you? What are you? Even when I started working for ABC News, the idea was, oh, well, are you going to try to be a reporter or try to be an anchor?
Right.
And I'm not a good journalist. I'm really not. So there was this, like, I was kind of good at all of these different things, but I wasn't sure. And I went to this astrologist, and he's wonderful, Brian Hill, and he had me write down all these things that I'm doing now. And I said, I just don't know how to make them fit into one thing. And he just drew a circle around all of them. And he was like, that's what you are.
Right.
He's like, there's a word, and it's like mogul. He's like, that's, you don't have to separate them, you know? And it's, there are times where it feels like it would be easier to just kind of ditch a bunch of the other things and go, okay, well, I'm at ABC most of the time anyway, so why don't I just try to be a journalist? But I'm not a good one, you know? And that would be dishonoring to the other things that I like to do.
See, I think you're making I think you're making this point. You're making it quite well. As a culture, we have a very limited view of how people should define themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really what human beings are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yes.
I have a favorite quote from Walt Whitman. It is, do I contradict myself? Very well, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yes, that resonates.
And see, I think that's what human beings are, but for whatever reason, culturally, we keep wanting to say, no, we can't, I cannot, no, that doesn't fit with that. I can't be both those things.
Mm-hmm.
But human beings are large and we contain multitudes.
Yeah.
We don't have to. So even you, who are living, breathing proof the multitudes are at the mercy of the culture that says, well, what are you? Mm-hmm. You know, narrow it down.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Right.
And for 5 years at the Hub, I was one of the partners of the video production company. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful time. And I, you know, the team at the Hub, I love them. Like, with their family to me. But it started when I wanted to go off on my own. I realized people don't know what I do. Even the people, it got to a point at the Hub even where the people who sat across me didn't really know what I did, you know. So this last 6 months have been about trying to name it in a way that people can understand it, but that it doesn't limit me. Mm-hmm. And that's been hard, and it's still, you know, it's still hard.
I'm not sure you have to work this hard at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure, I don't know, but it seems to me that, well, I mean, you know, you can take this for what it's worth. I think you should be doing what you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the universe is helping me right
yeah,
now.
Right.
So I'm like,
yeah. I think that you should be doing what feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel good anymore. You don't have to do it anymore. But that doesn't mean that you're not it anymore. It just means you don't feel like it anymore.
Yes. And you know how many people will just stay with something because they're like, well, I've done it this long, you know? And...
You know, I recently I interviewed Chuck Smith, who directed Knock Me a Kiss at WBTT.
Mm-hmm.
He decided very, very young that he needed to be a Marine. And so as soon as he possibly could, he enlisted in the Marines. And he did two tours, and then he took a little time off to check out civilian life. He hated it. He was completely bored, and he was getting ready to re-up when friends who worked in a community theater said, oh my God, we've just lost an actor, the show's about to go up, please stand in for it. So this is a man who is offended. Don't they know I'm a military man? They're asking me to do this artsy-fartsy stuff, right? Right? But they were friends, so he did it. Then comes the bows. He comes out, the audience goes crazy. And that's the end of it. He doesn't go back to the military. And everybody said to him, what's the matter with you? You have this career in, you know, in 20 years, you'll have a pension for the rest of your life. You've been in there. This is what you've been doing. This is what you always wanted to do. He just didn't do it anymore, right? And the conventional wisdom is what you were describing, that there's some kind of value in continuing to do what you have been doing. Well, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe not.
As long as it's still working for you, right? Or you're the same person. We change, right?
He has a wife in the theater now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Right?
Yes.
Right. So you really do demonstrate that one can risk being who one is, even if nobody approves of it, other people wouldn't do it this way, whatever, that it's possible to know yourself and to follow your own path.
Yeah, I think Steve Jobs said this, you can only connect the dots looking backward.
Right. Okay, so tell me about Gutenberg the Musical.
Gutenberg the Musical is a two-man show about the history of the printing press and Gutenberg, right? It's been done at a bunch of theaters around the country, and it's hysterical. It's in the same family of shows as The Big Bang, and there's a couple others where two-man shows where it's fast-paced, they play 100 different parts, and...
And it's a farce, isn't it?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Right,
farce.
Okay, so come out and see Joey in Gutenberg the Musical.
Yes, at American Stage.
Now, I do ask one more question. Yes. Having given so much of your life to the work of entertaining, would you say anything about what that's like?
Yeah, it's funny. This has recently come up in conversation with some of my close friends. There's a downtime that needs to happen, and I think sometimes we don't allow that to happen. When we are living for the art and giving through the art and giving kind of to the public, or you have to then balance that with some time for yourself. For me, sometimes it's just sitting on my iPad and just looking, just scrolling the web, and that's where my best ideas come from. You know, so I guess you have to balance, you've got to have time to kind of nurse yourself so that you can then keep giving to the art.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people have this feeling that being idle is somehow a crime.
Oh, yeah. It looks different on different people, you know? I mean, yeah. Sometimes for me, that feeding myself is going to the gym.
Yes.
Or sometimes it's taking a trip. Or sometimes it's going and blowing off steam. And sometimes it's just laying on the couch and watching whatever I can find on Apple TV, you know? And on different people, it looks different at different times. But yes, yeah. you gotta balance
it. I'm really glad you made that point. This is a great place to stop. Thank you, Joey.
Thank you. This is great.
So there you have it, what it sounds like when you are who you really are. So I neglected to say that if you want to hear any of my shows, or you want to talk to me, or get me to come to speak to your group or organization, or get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do, and What to Do About It, go up on my website, thelinshow.com. And so, as always, I hope you got something from this show you can use, something that intrigued you, something that inspired you to ask yourself, are you hiding something which you might be able to recover and use in your life? Are you everything that you could possibly be? Anything that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have gotten